Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Laser Show edition, as we get you ready for Sunday's game against the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field. I can't wait to see it for the first time. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play to have the latest episode sent directly to you. It's the greatest invention since the toaster. Coming up on this episode, Dave Lapham joins me with suggestions for new offensive coordinator Bill Lazor and what can be done about the Bengals' offensive line. He'll also have his keys to the game. Alex Marvez from the Sporting News and Sirius NFL Radio will join us to explain why Bengals fans should still have hope after an 0-2 start. And as the Bengals celebrate their 50th season, I'll sit down with team president Mike Brown to discuss the greatest defensive players in franchise history. But first, coming into this season, I had a fantastic stat that gave me confidence that after finishing 24th in the league in scoring last year under first-year offensive coordinator Ken Zampezi, the Bengals were bound to be much better this year. Here's the stat. Since Andy Dalton has been the Bengals quarterback, he's had three offensive coordinators. It'll be four with Bill Lazor taking over this week for Zampezi. The first was Jay Gruden. From his first year to his second year, the Bengals' point total jumped by 47. The second offensive coordinator was Hugh Jackson. From his first year to his second year, the Bengals' point total jumped by 54. So, I figured something similar would happen this year, in year two under Zampezi, since the players were familiar with his system. Not so much. After scoring no touchdowns and kicking three field goals in the first 2 weeks of the season, Marvin Lewis pulled the plug on his offensive coordinator.
Well, I just thought we were at a point in the season where we had the opportunity to move forward with the change and to get our offensive players more in tune, more productive. Kenny has worked his tail off here, been here with me for 15 seasons and done a great job, and things just haven't fell in place this season for us, and we've got to continue to move forward in the direction and, get our players more productive. We have very good players on offense, and we've got to make sure we put them in position to make plays, and we continue to make first downs, which lead eventually to touchdowns.
The key part of that soundbite, put them in position to make plays. That's the number one thing that Bill Lazor must do. Now time to bring in Dave Lapham for some thoughts on the coaching change, the Bengals' woes on the O-line, and the future Hall of Famer they'll be facing this Sunday. Lap, new offensive coordinator Bill Lazor isn't saying much about what changes he plans to make, nor should he. Why tip off the Green Bay Packers? But what are a few things you'd like to see him do?
First and foremost, simplify. I think their minds were blown with too much information in the first couple of weeks, and they weren't playing free and fast. You know, their minds were cluttered. So my thing is simplify, meet with your coaches, meet with your quarterback, meet with A.J. Green as well if you want to, and find out what everybody thinks they do best and make a short list of the things that everybody, the consensus opinion, we do best. And that's what you are. That's your identity. Right now, I have no idea. I don't think they have any idea what their identity is. But formulate that and cut the plays down. Instead of having 1,000 plays for everything, a few plays that you can run against everything. And give the ball to Joe Mixon. You know, three rookie running backs in the NFL are making a big splash. They're all in top five rushing. Joe Mixon, I think, is better than any of them. Put the ball in his belly. You know what Jeremy Hill is. You know what his upside potential is. You have no idea what Joe Mixon's is. Find out. Find out. Wear him out. Give him the ball 20, 25 times against Green Bay Packers. Much easier to pass block then, Dan, and they'll move the football.
Offensive coordinator Ken Zampezi lost his job. Andy Dalton's getting booed. But the Bengals' problems start up front on offense. All five offensive linemen are graded near the bottom of the pack at their position by Pro Football Focus. Is there hope?
You know, I think there can be hope. I think they can help themselves by being more aggressive in the running game, for sure. And, you know, cut block. Cut block in the running game. Cut block in the passing game on three-step drops. I see teams all over the league doing it. Here in Cincinnati, it's like, no, nobody in the NFL cuts. Baloney. I watched the entire offensive line for the Green Bay Packers cut Atlanta Falcon players so Aaron Rodgers had a clear vision for slant passes in the middle of the football field. Baloney. Get guys on the ground, get their hands down. They can help themselves. That would slow a pass rush down. You can also help with running backs chipping. I mean, against the Bengals, the Houston Texans chipped the defensive ends every single time with the running backs before they ran out in their route. Every single time. Do it. Help them. The biggest help, though, would be establish that running game, and now all of a sudden you start to anchor those pass rushers and get yourself in third and makeable situations. Third and five or less. You can still run the ball if you've established that part of it. If you haven't run the ball at all and you're third and seven or more, you're in trouble. You're in deep doo-doo. And you're going to have to keep a lot of people in to pass protect. So run it, play action pass. You know, if you establish a pressure point on a defense running the ball, play action pass off of that is pure gold. It's not. You don't have to be a football Einstein. It's not complicated. Do a few things well and win some football games.
Lap Aaron Rodgers has been the Packers' starting quarterback since 2008, and there's only one team he hasn't beaten, the Cincinnati Bengals. He is 0-2 in two starts against the Bengals. It's going to be tough to make it three at Lambeau on Sunday. What makes Rodgers one of the NFL's all-time best?
Everything he does. I mean, the guy is an incredible athlete for the quarterback position. He can throw on the move both ways. I mean, a lot of guys, right-handed quarterbacks, roll to their right and throw the ball effortlessly. He rolls to his left, can torque his body, square his shoulder pads up, and throw darts. I mean, to tight spots, rolling to his left. That, I think, separates him because most times they'll say, all right, when you flush the quarterback, make sure you flush him left. He's a right-handed guy. Flush him left. We have a better chance. Not with this guy. This guy is different. And then if he stands in the pocket, he can throw it 85 yards in the air to a tight little window. Just unbelievable velocity. I mean, last year, Dan, they went on a 6-0 run to finish the season. And then they went 6-1 in a seven-game stretch that he had in that 6-1 finish. Over 2,000 yards, 70%, 18 touchdowns, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 120. I mean, ridiculous. Put the team right on his shoulders. He famously said, let's run the table. And they went and did it. Thing about him, though, Dan, last year, 50th in the NFL in the top 50 rushers, 369 yards, 5.5 yards a carry, rushed for 4 touchdowns, responsible for 44 touchdowns. Can beat you with his mind, his legs, his arm, every body part Aaron Rodgers can beat you with. It's unbelievable.
Aaron Rodgers has a career passer rating of 103.8. That's number one in NFL history. In fact, he's the only quarterback with a career passer rating over 100. As I mentioned a lap, Rodgers is 0-2 against the Bengals, and the last meeting between Cincinnati and Green Bay was a classic. The Bengals jumped out to a 14-0 lead in the first 6 minutes. Then, the Packers ran off 30 straight points to lead by 16 late in the third quarter. It looked like the Bengals were finished, but they came back and pulled within 3 with about 4 minutes to go when Green Bay tried to put the game away by going for a first down on 4th-and-1 at the Cincinnati 30.
Rodgers has it, gives to Franklin. He dives.
No,
I don't think he got it.
Balls out.
The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown.
Oh,
will it stand?
Woo-hoo.
Terrence Newman takes it back nearly 70 yards. Franklin dove, trying to pick up the yard on 4th-and-1. The ball squirted out. Newman comes up with it, takes it back. And for the time being, the scoreboard shows 33-30 Cincinnati.
Terrence Newman with a fumble return touchdown to win the game. And ever since, we've had a doctor in the broadcast booth in case Lap's passion leads to palpitations. Alex Marvez used to cover the Bengals for the Dayton Daily News. Now he covers the NFL for the Sporting News and hosts a show on Sirius NFL Radio. He wrote a story this week pointing out that in each of the last 4 years, at least one team that started 0-2 made the playoffs. He then went on to rank which of this year's 0-2 teams have the best chance of extending that streak and put the Bengals number one. Alex joined Lap and me to discuss that on the Bengals Game Plan Show.
You're right. I have the Bengals ranked atop that list. And listen, it's been a rough go of it the first 2 weeks, and I understand the frustration of Bengals fans. I'm not going to throw my hat at Andy Dalton or anything like that. But I get the point. You know, I understand where people are coming from. But you look ahead at this schedule, and I know Green Bay is going to be a tough task, and it's very well maybe a Bengals team that's 0-3. But you start looking ahead a little bit here, and the schedule does even out a little bit. And you get Vontaze Burfict back, and he starts to make some plays for you on defense. He's the guy that sets that tempo. It's a different unit when he's out there. And suddenly these games, Buffalo, you know, these Cleveland, I mean, these teams that just aren't very good, I think the Bengals at the midway point of the season could very well be a 500 team and right in the thick of being back in this.
So the one I'm thinking about, the Baltimore Ravens win the Super Bowl. Cam Cameron starts the year as the offensive coordinator. About game four or five, somewhere in there, they fire Cam Cameron. And they, you know, they make a move in that area, and they go on. And I'm not predicting a Super Bowl victory, but they certainly adjusted. They certainly got things done. I mean, they got Mark Trestman, moved him up into an offensive coordinator role from his quarterback coaching responsibilities. Same progress that we're looking at here. So it's not like it's never been done. Am I saying it's done all the time? No. But I'm saying there have been cases where the head coach, not fired, but one of his coordinators was in the early stages of the season, and the guys catch fire, make adjustments, and go on to succeed. It's not impossible.
Absolutely, and that's another thing. Listen, I know Bill Lazor a little bit, and talking to some of the people that know Bill, you know, as well, here's what I think they think is going to happen. A lot more short passes. Look, Andy's confidence right now, I'm not sure where it's at. This guy on the sideline, you could just tell by his demeanor, this isn't the same Andy Dalton that we've seen develop into a real top-flight quarterback over the past few years. I mean, I'm still an Andy Dalton fan, although when I look at him now, I realize, wow, there are some problems. You know, I don't know if it's footwork. I don't know if it's timing with some of the receivers. I mean, there were just some real plays that were out there on the field to be made against Houston that got left by the wayside based just upon physical skill, not schematic that
right.
Ken Zampezi put in,
right.
Okay? Just
right.
Andy and the receivers weren't on the same page. But listen, what you got to do is you got to get Andy back in rhythm. So that means you throw some more short passes. You also take some of the stress off this offensive line. Listen, at this point, unfortunately, they're not going to be able to give him 5, 6, 7 seconds to let plays develop downfield on a consistent basis. So don't expect it. Don't make Andy Dalton run for his life. Put him in position of succeed with some different play calls. That being said, it does get tough when you don't know the availability of Tyler Eifert, and I know he missed practice today with a back injury. He can be such a huge part of this offense, but you know, you can't help the club if you're in the tub, so to speak, and the fact that he keeps missing games makes it hard to incorporate him in your game planning.
Alex Marvez from the Sporting News and Sirius NFL Radio is our guest. You used to cover the Bengals for the Dayton Daily News. You've got a great relationship with Mike Brown, so you know as well as anybody the Bengals historically are very reluctant to fire coaches. Mike can be loyal to a fault. Were you at all surprised that 2 weeks into the season they would change coordinators?
I was a bit surprised. Listen, Marvin gives incredible leeway to his assistant coaches to do their jobs, and he doesn't meddle. Sometimes I think it's actually to a fault, to be honest with you, because I think sometimes Marvin should have put the hammer down in recent seasons, maybe when it comes to running the football a little bit more ground and pound types of things. But, you know, again, Marvin, you know, that's the type of culture that he has built there, and it's why coaches are very loyal to him, and he's very loyal to them. But something needed to change. And an offense that scores 9 points in its first two games, we remember what happened the last time, right, in 2000 when Bruce Coslett left looking like a ghost out of that building after about 3 weeks and Dick LeBeau took over. That's the last time the Bengals have scored 9 points in the first two games of a season. And, of course, we all know the stat, the 1939 Philadelphia Eagles, the last team to open with two games at home and not score a touchdown. So something had to change. And I think that they believe that Andy Dalton is a better quarterback than A.J. McCarron at this point, and they are very loath to go down that road. They want to try to fix Andy and work through this. And you know, more, you know, listen, give credit to the coaches for sticking with Andy Dalton through this because of the loyalty they have to him as well. So, you know, I just think that they felt this was the easiest move to make. And listen, it wasn't like Ken Zampezi came into this season, you know, like Dick LeBeau or Wade Phillips or someone that it's, you know, basically impeccable as a coordinator. There were a lot of questions about whether he was the right guy for the job. And part of the problem is he replaced Hugh Jackson. And Hugh is a larger-than-life figure. You know, he really was to the players in the locker room, the way he handles himself. You see the charisma that he has. That's not Ken Zampezi, you know, quite honestly, and that's no knock on him. He's got to be who he is as a person, but he was put in an awfully tough spot.
While Alex had some great research on teams making the playoffs after starting 0-2, I did some digging this week on teams that failed to score a touchdown in their first two games of the season. Since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970, the Bengals are one of 17 teams that did not score a TD in the first 2 weeks. There's another one this year, by the way, the San Francisco 49ers. On average, the previous 15 teams finished 5-11. Not good. But two teams have made the playoffs after failing to score a touchdown in weeks 1 and 2. The 1990 Saints under Jim Mora and the 1988 Cleveland Browns under Marty Schottenheimer. Oh, and by the way, in case you're wondering, there's only been one team since 1970 that did not score a touchdown in the first three games of the season. The expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 1976. They didn't score a TD until game four and finished 0-14. As part of the celebration of the Bengals' 50th season, the team's all-time greatest players will be recognized at every regular season home game. And on this edition of the Bengals Booth podcast, it's a special treat as I go down memory lane with team president Mike Brown. Mike, in recent years, we've asked you to share some memories about some of the greatest coaches, quarterbacks, and wide receivers in franchise history. And today, we are going to focus on some of the great defensive players in Bengals history. We're going to start with the seventh overall pick in the draft out of Penn State. He had 12 and 13 sacks in back-to-back seasons and then quit to start a music career, Mike Reed.
He's a wonderful guy. Was a terrific player, defensive tackle that had exceptional quickness, and guys couldn't stay in front of him. The blockers couldn't match up on him. He'd get by him in an instant. In those days, the pass protection rules were a little different. They couldn't put their hands out there like they can today. Maybe it wouldn't be as easy today, but we never had here a quicker tackle than Mike Reed. He was the Geno Atkins of his day.
Did you suspect that he might leave football for music?
No. He went to his own drummer, and I admire him for carving out the life that he wanted. He wasn't afraid to take the chance, the risk. He went on. We thought we were big stuff and paying him pretty well, and he left and went out to perform at Holiday Inns and such round and about, and he raised himself up in that world by his bootstraps, but he became successful in it and had a splendid career there. I give him great credit for living his life the way he wanted to live it.
Our next former Bengal was a defensive end on both Super Bowl teams. He is the franchise's all-time leader in sacks, Eddie Edwards.
Eddie was a great athlete, a solid, dependable player. You just didn't worry about his spot when he was in there. You knew it would be done right. He had a good, solid career here and deserves more recognition than maybe he has received.
Our next former Bengal was only on the team for two seasons, but he went to the Pro Bowl in both of them. He still holds the franchise record for sacks in a season, Coy Bacon.
Coy Bacon was a great player. We got him towards the end of his career in a trade. And as a pass rusher, we've never had a better outside pass rusher. He had long arms, he had speed, he had real strength. And he could go in and push a guy back, twist him around, beat him with speed. He had everything that you wanted in a pass rusher. I don't remember the number. We were playing fewer games back then. But he had more sacks in a short season compared to the length of season today than anyone going in football these days.
The record book credits him with 22 sacks. He claims it was 26.
It very well may have been.
A second-round draft pick out of Arkansas State led the team in tackles in three of his five seasons with the Bengals, Bill Berge.
Berge had what you want in a middle linebacker. He was as big as Berfick is today. Berge could really run. He was about a 4'6 guy. And he had linebacker-like enthusiasm and energy. When he hit him, he smacked him, he nubbed him, he stopped him. And I always remembered the Steeler people didn't like it because one time he did that to Bradshaw, and they coined the verb Berge eyes. I always liked that as a verb.
Up next, the second-round pick out of LSU. He went to 3 Pro Bowls in 6 seasons with the Bengals, and then he also quit at an early age to become an eye doctor, Tommy Casanova.
When he came here, we helped him get into medical school here at UC and gave him the time to attend to his medical school program as well as play with us. We knew that he would not go long as a player once he got his MD degree, that he'd go off in the medical world. That's what his dad did, and he went back home and followed that same career path. He was a tremendous player. He did everything effortlessly. He ran so smoothly. He was the prettiest runner maybe we ever had here. He just was fun to watch. He glided across the field. He had tremendous range, good ball sense, and could play the free safety spot just as well as you could want. I haven't seen anyone do it better.
Seventh round pick out of Lincoln University, a 6-time Pro Bowler in 8 seasons with the Bengals, Lamar Parrish.
Lamar was the most talented cornerback we ever had. He had unusual quickness. He had raw speed to go with it. He could play a ball in flight. He was a shutdown corner before there was a term shutdown corner. And he was also, along with that, a top-level punt return, kickoff return player. He made a difference in games that way as well. My dad used to tell the story. We were playing Washington. We didn't move the ball all day long, yet we ended up winning the game because Lamar caught a punt, and he returned it through what from the stands or the sideline looked to be just a mass of Redskin players. It looked as though he ran into a huddle and ran out the back end. And my dad said to Lamar, what was it like in there going through this huddle mass of Redskin players? And Lamar's comment, coach, it was dark in there.
That was a 90-yard punt return touchdown. He had an interception return touchdown in the same game. Up next, out of Dartmouth, a Bengal for 14 seasons, a true Renaissance man, Reggie Williams.
Reggie was a solid player from us. It always made me happy that he went to Dartmouth, my old school, not a school known for producing NFL linebackers. While Reggie was here, he was a city councilman for 3 years. That's up at the Cincinnati City Council. And that alone sort of makes him stand out. But afterwards, he went into work with Disney. He was instrumental in the creation of the Wide World of Sports complex adjacent to the theme park down in Orlando, and he operated that for Disney for a number of years. Late in life, Reggie's 62 now. He had a knee operation that didn't go well. His knee got infected, and the doctors told him he should have his knee amputated. Reggie, being Reggie, refused, and he worked through it. He doesn't walk easily today, but he walks, and he walks on his own leg.
Up next, a quarterback in college at Florida A&M, but your father converted him to cornerback, and he wound up with 65 interceptions, tied for 5th in NFL history, Ken Riley.
Kenny came out of college as a quarterback the same year we drafted Greg Cook, number one from UC. Greg Cook was the greatest talent we ever had here. His career ended tragically soon. He was injured, and that ended him as a player. But when Kenny showed up, Greg Cook was in full bloom, and it didn't take Kenny long to figure out what that meant. Just in the second day of training camp, my father came over to the quarterbacks and said to Kenny, go over and practice with the defensive backs. And Kenny's feelings wasn't hurt. He understood that it was going to be hard for him with Greg on hand. He went over with the cornerbacks. He was our starter for 15 years, and he still holds our record for interceptions. After football, he went into coaching. He was an assistant in the league and then the head coach at Florida A&M, his alma mater. And at the end, he was athletic director down there.
A third-round pick out of Arizona State who helped redefine the safety position, David Fulcher.
Fulcher was one of a kind. He's a big man playing a small man's position, and he moved well enough. He could figure it out well enough. He was used the right way. Dick LeBeau was our coach, and he used him more close up than deep, but he could run. You put him deep, and he could get there. But when he was in the closer range at safety, he nubbed people. I mean, he didn't tackle him. He didn't stop him. He smashed him. And I've never seen one that could do that better. He was a player that deserved great credit. And I think if he had been in a big market where publicity comes easier, he would have had more ballyhoo and probably been more well-known than he is today. He should be better known than he is.
Last but not least, the 10th-round pick out of Wisconsin who never missed a game in 12 seasons with the Bengals, Tim Crumry.
Well, Crumry is first in everybody's heart because he had the kind of effort that you respect. He defined try hard, and you put him out on the field, and every play was an all-out effort from him. That raised the level from others. They played better because he made them play better. They saw him do it, and they had to keep up. We loved Crumry. I loved him as a guy. He was special, and we were lucky to have him.
We will be seeing most of those names back at Paul Brown Stadium this year as part of the 50th season celebration. We look forward to that, and as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike Brown has seen all 12 meetings between the Bengals and Packers, a series the Bengals lead 7-5 thanks to a three-game winning streak. Dave Lapham returns to tell us what the Bengals must do to extend that winning streak to 4. All right, partner, let's get to Sunday's keys to the game.
Dan, I think the biggest thing is an attitude adjustment, you know, particularly on the offensive side of the football. I think that the first couple of weeks, the Bengals were playing defensive offense, and that's not good. You know, you have an offensive unit and a defensive unit. Offensively, you want to punch and make the defense counterpunch. You don't want it the other way around. You don't want to be back on your heels saying, oh, what are they going to do to us, and we have to react and counter that. No, that's not the way you should play offense. You should say to the defense, here we come. You can't stop us. You're going to have to do something to counter us. You're going to have to counterpunch. We're going to be on the attack. And that's what they have to do. They have to have an attitude adjustment and attack and simplify. That's the easiest way to do it because you can play so much faster. Declutter your mind. Too many plays, too much information. You know, focus on a few plays that you do well and run them over and over and over again and make the Packers adjust to you. And then finish every single play, Dan. You got to score touchdowns in the NFL to win. There's no question about it. Touchdowns, red zone, wherever. You just got to get the ball in the end zone. I think hopefully Andy Dalton's throwing Bill Lazor-like rockets, and hopefully the focus is laser-like, you know, for the entire offensive football team. But not only offense to finish plays, defensively. Watson's touchdown run was embarrassing. You know, they played cover two, had 11 guys who could rally to the football. They didn't run to the ball. When you don't run to the ball, bad things happen. When you run to it with proper angles or pursuit and good football geometry, good things happen. You got to take the proper angles and run to the ball. And then position. Defensively, turnovers. They've only forced one. You know, that's not good enough. The Bengals have given up 6 turnovers. Value the football. 6 giveaways tied with Cleveland for the most in the NFL. They're -5, worst in the NFL in turnover ratio. Value the ball, win the turnover margin, and then finally position, field position. You know, special teams are going to have to back Aaron Rodgers up, maybe turnovers back him up as well, put him on long fields, make him run multiple plays. You increase the percentage for mistake. Andy Dalton, a struggling offense, just the opposite. Get him some short fields, fewer plays. You know, get their confidence, get their rhythm going, their timing going. I think that those are all big things in this football game.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play to have the latest episode delivered right to you. And if you enjoy it, please take the time to give us a 5-star rating, if you can figure out how to do that. It's kind of tricky. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.